Now, it's time for a little R&R.
Ball into the bucket, lays it up and in.
Ball game, Rizzo!
Live in the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios, this is Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.
This team is going to be tough when they finally get it together.
Sit back and relax. Let Russo and Rizzo take you home.
Oh, mercy!
Light him up, Collins!
Mets! October baseball's here, baby! The Mets with an 8-7 lead, bottom nine, one out. Matt Olson at the plate. They kept Diaz out there after he completely collapsed there in the bottom of the eighth, trusting him to get two more outs. Mets looking for a postseason berth. Hi, everybody! Russo and Rizzo live here, ESPN 106.3. Colin Russo, joined alongside me, Mike Rizzo, Damian Perez, of course, behind the glass.
Are we going to go a little play-by-play here?
I'm okay with that.
I'll be your color man.
Yeah,
you need a color man, kid?
We could do a little, you're the Smoltz, and I could be a little buck action, see what's going on. But this has been a fascinating game over there in Truist Park over in Atlanta. Mets, of course, vying for a postseason bid, the first of a doubleheader. I know in a lot of ways this game does not matter, but this has been postseason baseball at its finest because I'm assuming that both sides here, whoever wins this first game is going to punt the second game, and you're not going to have much of a challenge due to them not wanting to use arms and this, that, and the other. But nonetheless, it's been a fun program. It's been a fun last 30 minutes. As well, we got one laid down in a base hit here, so we got one on, one out, bottom nine. Diaz up to 30 pitches now going into the second half of the lineup.
I told you it'd be foolish for the Mets to bring Diaz back in, but you know, you turn around, so you go, well, Riz, that's why they brought him in, to go extended innings, to go two innings. I didn't like what I saw from him in that eighth.
He blew that eighth.
Didn't like what I saw from him in that eighth. I'm surprised, like, right when Lindor hit that homer, I probably would have either A, had someone warming up, or B, would have had someone ready to go in this inning. This has a playoff feel to it, and it's awesome.
This feels like playoff baseball.
This has a playoff feel, and it's amazing, and I guess I'm, like, I don't want to say subconsciously rooting for the Mets, but like I'm kind of over the Braves.
I am too.
I'm kind of over the Braves. I'm kind of over them always getting in, them being a juggernaut. I think it's great what the Braves were able to do this year, overcoming a lot of those injuries. Chris Sale emerging as the NL Cy Young after Spencer Strider, you know, the young fastball heater.
Man, hasn't pitched since April 5th.
And no Ronald Acuna, what was it, 30-70? Last year, Fukuna.
40 and 70.
So you're missing a lot out of that lineup. So for them to do what they did is pretty impressive.
Oh, my goodness. Bottom nine, one on. Ramon Laureano, the former steroid user.
And former Guardian. He was on our team, my team earlier.
Fires one down the third baseline, just goes foul. Would have definitely brought, they got White at first. That definitely would have brought him to third.
Who out of these teams could go on a run? I think it's the Mets. Why do I think it's the Mets?
The Mets have mojo.
I think it's the Mets because, Colin, you talk a lot about theme, and you crack me up to kingdom come with it. What's the theme with the Mets? Why not us, right?
Yeah.
Everyone counted us out last year. We spent a lot of money, and, you know, we pooped the sheets. Yeah. But here we are. We come back the year later. We're ready to roll, baby.
Diaz, of course, one out, man on second. That was Eli White, who came in to pinch hit for Soler there in the bottom of the ninth. He had a base hit down the center. Interesting, they got Laureano now 0-2, 32 pitches now for Edwin Diaz. 8-7 game, Mets over Braves. Of course, Braves were leading this one at the top of the eighth by a score of 3-0, in which the Mets rumbled back with a six-run. Top of the eighth. I don't think I've ever seen that from them. The Mets don't ever do this.
No.
This is what usually the Mets do.
No.
It was Mets fashion in the top of the ninth. Excuse me, the bottom of the eighth when Diaz gave up four runs and a three-run double to Ozzie Albies. That is the Mets to lose that one. But ultimately, this has been a very impressive game of October baseball.
If I'm the Mets, my theme, if I'm the skipper of the Mets, My theme is why not us?
Yeah.
Why not us? Everyone had us down for the count early on in the year. No one was picking us before the year. They have a player like Francisco Lindor, who's very dear to me, playing for my former team. So, and how about that home run he hit?
Lindor, they hang a...
It didn't look like he got off.
No, they're hanging a curveball over the plate with Marte on first. And Lindor takes that one to the house for an 8-7 go-ahead run, top of the ninth. Who do they got here? Renard?
Yeah,
Dionard.
Dude, you and I both. Darnot?
Darnot, I think they do.
Darnot?
But I think he hits middle of the lineup here. Eli White sitting at second, tying run at second, go-ahead run at the plate, bottom nine, two out. That was a 91-mile-an-hour fastball outside the plate. That's how Edwin Diaz retired Ramon Laureano.
I mean, the implications on this game, folks, both teams deadlocked at 88-72.
88-72? Oh, wow, another slider, 91, bottom left of the plate.
So
gets him swinging there, two outs.
Let me ask you this, Colin. Does it go to run differential? Say the Mets.
Say
the Mets win this, and then the Braves win game two.
No, so they both get it. So here's the situation: 2-2 slot. He's pounding that slider. Slider bottom of the plate again. Darnard at the plate. 8-7 ball game. Bottom nine, man on second. Here's the situation. This is why the game doesn't mean as much if they play the way I think it's going to happen, because the Diamondbacks blew the game on Saturday. The Diamondbacks are watching this game sweating because they need one of these two teams to sweep this doubleheader. If one of these two teams sweep the doubleheader, then that team that sweeps and the Diamondbacks get in. Now, if they split the doubleheader, then they both get in. D-backs are out. Darnard hits one into Lindor, gets him out at first, fires it through to Alonso.
Game over.
That is game over. The first of the doubleheader. Lindor, a two-run shot in the top of the ninth day. The go-ahead run, 11 hits for the Mets in that one, 12 for the Atlanta Braves. The Braves, of course, pounded off to a 3-0 lead. Mets rumble back, get it to a 6-3 ball game, responded with, in the bottom of the eighth, a four-run inning by the Atlanta Braves. 10 runs that we saw in that
eighth,
but now the Mets officially clinched the wild card. And here's what's interesting. The MLB told them no celebrating, no champagne, no T-shirts. Play the second game.
What?
Stupid. Stupid.
Another thing by the MLB that we can't see.
So what the Mets also did is the Mets had a couple options here. So did the Braves. The Braves could have went Sale game one, but instead they went Spencer Schwellenbach. And they could have went Sale early, but instead they're saving Sale because they want to use him for the wild card series. Now I'm sure the Braves, they have to use Sale. They have to because they need the game. But it's a matter of if the Mets want to use Severino here and knock the Braves out, if they're motivated by that, or if this is, hey, we played our game, we have a game tomorrow, we're going to be playing in Milwaukee, do we want to deal with this? Ultimately, I think that with the Mets here, they're going to punt and the Braves are going to steal this one, which is why the game doesn't matter as much, because I think this is just an outcome of bad scheduling by the MLB. But nonetheless, a fun ball game.
Very much so. And the MLB kind of getting bailed out, right, with this game. And the first thing I asked you, you know, Colin, we've been here since about 10 o'clock. When I saw you had this game on earlier, first thing I asked you, how many people are there?
Yeah.
How many people are at the game?
And so it's what people said. So what they should have done last week, for those who don't know, this doubleheader was a replay of what happened last week, of course, with the hurricane.
Right.
And the weather wiped out the last two games. It was last Wednesday and last Thursday. They played Tuesday's game. And they both had a dual off day, on Monday. And instead of moving the games up to try to knock out more games, get a doubleheader, or last-ditch effort, go play it somewhere else. Go play it in Miami. Go play it in Arlington.
Yep.
Go play it elsewhere. The Braves are thinking about the ticket sales and go, no, we want a doubleheader on Monday. But then you're dealing with a myriad of outcomes with the Padres and the Diamondbacks and now the Mets and the Braves. Luckily enough, you get to play the game. But now the second game doesn't matter because the Diamondbacks blew the game on Saturday. And both the Mets and the Braves have the tiebreaker over the D-backs, which is why the D-backs are probably screwed here. But nonetheless, this is October baseball. Starts tomorrow.
It does.
Isn't that weird?
Very,
starts
very,
tomorrow.
It does. It's weird. It's something we talked about last week. We knew this was going to happen. we knew that we were going to be watching this game going, my God, hi.
That first game.
How are we starting playoff baseball tomorrow? We're watching a game right now.
Mm-hmm.
They canceled that Cleveland and Houston game.
Yeah.
By the way, just straight up canceled it.
And I saw Jose Ramirez was in a chance to get 40 homers.
Yep.
And I mean, I'm sure the Guardians are fine with it. I mean,
yeah, they'll be completely fine with it. But
get your rest.
When you're a playoff team, when you have a spot locked in, I think a lot has to do with how you're playing. Like, it's why I asked you last week, did Detroit peak too early? And you kind of rebutted with, what happens if they stay hot? And vice versa, too. If you stumble your last two, three games after clinching, does that really leave a good taste in your mouth heading into October baseball? Or are you, going to be ready to go in a week when it's your turn to go? We saw last year all those teams lose. We drafted our playoff teams. I took a lot of the favorites. Yeah. I'm banking on that not happening this year, on the sleeper team in the Diamondbacks beating the Dodgers in a three-game series.
Yeah, and that this rest has proved to be difficult for teams trying to adjust to pattern and adjust to getting into their mojo because, you mentioned this. That's all playoff baseball is.
It is.
Mojo. Mojo and vibe. That's why it's incredible that for the Braves here, such an incredible game by Schwellenbach, played a terrific game. And then all of a sudden, the Braves, who have been near the top of the line in terms of pitching all around throughout this entire season, bullpen included, and now they got, I think it was three different relievers that got banged around a bit by that Mets offense. Good for the Mets. And I'm not a Met guy. Good for the Mets. The Mets needed a mojo win like this. After the series against the Phillies last weekend, I thought the Mets were I thought they were in great shape. Then all of a sudden, they were terrible during the week. They lost the first of this three-game series to the Braves last Tuesday, and they smoked it against the Brewers over the weekend. The Mets needed mojo.
They did.
And that game gives you mojo.
It gives you mojo, and what I love about it was in the final two innings. Six runs in the eighth. Two runs in the ninth.
See, I don't know how you turn around and play another ball game after this.
Right.
And
if you're the Mets, you punt.
Everybody's in street clothes. Put everybody in street clothes and get a bunch of minor leaguers out there.
That's what I was about to say. If you're the Mets, you punt this game.
I agree.
And obviously the Braves are fighting for their lives because you astutely pointed out if the Mets do sweep this somehow, the Braves are on the outside looking in behind the Diamondbacks.
If this was Sunday instead of Monday and you had a day off after this, I would consider knocking the Braves out of the postseason. I would consider that as a manager.
In division
just because
rivals.
You screw them, and they screwed you over in 2022, for those who remember. The Mets had the lead on the on that last spot for the division, and the Braves won three straight. So as a screw you to the Braves, I think that would have been interesting. Nonetheless, yep. It's Russo and Rizzo live here, ESPN 106.3. There is our baseball breakdown to start out the show. We'll touch on that a little later as this second doubleheader aims to get that first pitch off in about 40 minutes or so. But that was Mike Rizzo, Colin Russo, Damian Presba, as always, behind the glass helping us out. No C-Cat today. He was with Theo Dorsey. They were at Miami Heat Media Day today.
Yeah, Colin, I've never been to Miami. I've never been to South Beach.
If only we were invited.
We weren't invited. What's up with that? That's the first thing I think.
No. I'm folks, happy. It's either watching
hang
us.
On. I'm yeah, not.
I would rather watch this.
You're probably right on that.
I'd rather watch the Mets.
I kind of just wanted something to scream at, but it's like you getting the coffee table.
It's the
Where's
principle.
My coffee?
It's the principle.
Where's my coffee table?
It's the principle.
Where's my invite to Heat?
The principle attached is more than the, listen, do we want to sit in traffic coming back after a Miami Heat media day? No, I don't.
I promise usually I'm low maintenance, but when things like that happen, I just go, well, where's mine? What's going on? You know what I mean? You guys go, for instance, John O'Terry, one of our MCs here at ESPN West Palm, Colin, you guys are always getting delicious food. And I'm always in the weeds from I'd say 10:30 to
about
2.
What do you mean he's always getting delicious food?
Dude, he's always he should be on the food channel with some of the places he goes around here.
Oh, so he brings in food from all these places.
And he asks everybody what they want, and I never get the invite.
Oh,
I never get
asked.
That's
only happened to me once. He got pizza once from down the street.
Yeah.
That was the only time
I
was
included.
And
I'm always looking at O'Terry going, where is this?
So
you were busy.
What do you
mean your problem
I was busy?
Is that people in the office don't when they're trying to get food, from the area in here, downtown City Place, West Palm Beach, they don't include you in these discussions.
Yeah, and let me tell you how it goes. You want to hear how it goes?
I'd love to.
You know, Terry, why didn't you get me anything?
The door was shut in production, and it had the sign that "Do not enter."
If you were doing questionable call with Josh Cohen, then I mean, I don't blame him.
But hang on,
the door was shut, and we had no way of getting you. You know, asking you.
We have phones. It's 2024,
Terry. That's
Terry.
The point. Right, I agree with him not walking in, but at least a text. It wouldn't hurt.
We didn't think we should get bothered while you had Josh here.
When things like that pop up, Colin, it's usually like, well, what about me?
People leave Mike Rizzo out of the conversation. Why is that? Why is Mike not getting invited to get a sandwich?
Yeah, I want a sandwich.
I'm hungry too.
Colin, we want some delicious city place. You know, some pizza.
We'd be okay with Miami Heat. Media day, if they didn't have that Met game on in that Heat media day, I'd be pissed off, and I guarantee they didn't.
I've never been to Miami. Aren't we trying to get our show out there and the name out there?
Yeah, I agree.
Don't we need to get on the road, see? We had a great time at that autograph collection.
Yeah, absolutely. Palm Beach autographs. They had Tyreek Hill, Odo Beckham Jr., Jonnu Smith, Devon Achane. Yeah, I agree. But our silver lining is we got to watch a terrific ball game.
Correct.
Between the Mets and the Braves. Mets clinch that wild card berth. One more game to play in that doubleheader. We'll see how the Mets play it. I'm going to assume, based on this interpretation, that the Mets won't really care. There's Steve Cohen, I believe, hugging.
God, I'll tell you what. He got a bad rap. Less than 365 days ago.
Yeah, well, I mean, think about it. They have half their payroll coming off the books after this season because of the Verlander and the Scherzer extensions. And they finally get them off the books here. The Mets are in a good spot here. They have mojo. The pitching's been reliable. They have so many A's, too. Oh, my God. Manaea's on that team, too. Sean Manaea, who's a former A, who blew multiple playoff games for the A's, and now all of a sudden he's the Mets' go-to guy. Whatever, that's besides the point. It's Russo and Rizzo. We got to get to the NFL a little bit. Packed week of Week 4 action kicked off yesterday. Of course, that Georgia-Bama had that terrific fourth quarter on Saturday night. And a couple other games that we got to touch on. We were terrible on the betting side of things when it comes to the NFL. We'll get into that a little later. A couple coaches under fire, including Nick Sirianni, what's new, and Robert Saleh of the New York Jets for their decision-making and ultimately how they planned out how both of these teams lost, the Jets to the Broncos, a 10-9 ball game at MetLife in a rainstorm. And, of course, the Buccaneers going at the Eagles Raymond James Stadium or something like that?
Yeah, I call it the giant pirate ship.
Yeah. It's an amusement park. But they got killed there, and everybody's going after Sirianni. Everybody's going after Saleh. I don't really understand that. People are calling for the jobs. We'll get into this next, and this is my tease. People wanted Robert Saleh's job. Last year, it was all Zach Wilson's fault. Now, with Rodgers there and Hackett under his umbrella of protection, it's Saleh's fault. Saleh's a defensive-minded head coach. They held that team to 10 points. At what point? And they missed a kick to win the game. This is a Saleh problem?
Hey, wait. Can I get in this action?
All we need is decent quarterback play, and the Jets are going to win the division.
So this is Saleh's problem. We'll get into that more next. You listen to Russo and Rizzo live here at ESPN 106.3.
Let's get back to the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios. This is Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.
Rolling on here, Russo and Rizzo live here, ESPN 106.3. A terrific ball game just took place at Truist Park in Atlanta between the Mets and the Braves. First of a doubleheader to decide playoff seeding on the NL side of things on the wild card. Mets steal that one. A back-and-forth game in which the Braves rumbled to a 3-0 lead. The Mets rumbled back top of the eighth with a 6-run explosion. Then all of a sudden, the Braves respond in October baseball fashion. Bottom of the eighth, they bring in 4, take a 7-6 lead. Of course, Lindor hangs one over the middle, brings in Starling Marte and a 2-run shot in the top of the ninth to take an 8-7 lead, which led to the final. 8-7. Mets clinch. We'll see what happens. The next game is slated to first pitch in about 20 minutes. We'll keep an eye on that. I think the other team will punt, but that's Mike Rizzo, Colin Russo, Damian Prez behind the glass. Russo and Rizzo live here, ESPN 106.3. I mean, this is one of the bad beats that we've had was that Jet game. I'll tell you this.
Do you want to know what didn't have theme? Do you want to know what didn't have spirit? Were mojo. NFL picks. Mojo.
We have no mojo right now.
Everything Colin talks about when we make picks, folks, open up the curtain a little bit. When we make picks, he goes, Riz, where's the theme in that pick? What's the theme in the pick? Our theme is losing in the National Football League. What, maybe we take a week off. Maybe we just pick some college. We went 2-1 in college.
We could do that.
We played good in college.
We've been solid in college.
Honest to God, you look at our numbers. I think we've lost like 3 games all year in college in like 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah, and we've been terrible in the NFL.
Oh, miserable. I couldn't hit an NFL pick. Water, you know, falling out of a boat.
Yeah, you couldn't.
Right? If an NFL pick was water, I wouldn't hit it falling
couldn't
out of a boat.
Hit the water from the beach.
Exactly.
Oh, my God.
Golf ball into the ocean. I mean, honest to God, I'd hit land somehow.
Unbelievable. We've been terrible.
Oh. Doesn't even
and
do
we,
it
And when we go 3-4, we got our lock. BYU.
Yeah, we did get
Jake
our lock,
Retzlaff
baby.
At quarterback. I
That's
swear.
Our guy.
That's our
That's
guy.
That's our guy, man.
We're BYU. I'm
That's
a Cougar.
Our guy.
I'm a Cougar. Sign me up. The Mormons. I'm in.
Let's go.
I might convert. I'm in.
Don't tell Father Bob that, but.
I'm in on BYU. And Jake Retzlaff, I swear, a 34-28 final at Waco playing Baylor. And they almost blew the game. And I'll tell you, BYU tried their hardest to blow this game.
Baylor had
so many opportunities to take that win, and they kept turnover on downs, interception.
Dude, I was afraid to text you because we were texting early in the morning about these games, rather afternoon, early afternoon. And I can't lie, Colin, I was sweating that one out watching that. And can I take my victory lap for the Fighting Illini, too? I mean, my God,
yeah, they played tough.
They
and it
do,
was a 14-7.
And
they were never going to win that game.
Never, never. But I was impressed with the way they defended Penn State. Now, Penn State really doesn't have anything offensively. With all due respect to Drew Aller, who's from the same area of Cleveland than I am, but they had nothing going offensively. They haven't really had anything going offensively all year. But Oski Wow, man, Illini, dude, they covered for us. And I know Mike T and all my Peoria guys listening, you know, Jimmy, all my Peoria guys listening, man, they were all fired up about that. But it's that classic Bielma game, right? That classic Bielma game where they slow the game down, they muck it up, they run the football. I was impressed with their quarterback, Altmaier, until the turnovers on the final two drives, too. But, oh, God, maybe we stick to college, partner.
Yeah.
Now, Bowling Green.
Bowling Green was a rough one.
We got to have Fat Jack on this Friday and explain Bowling Green to him.
He's going to have to tough that one out. He was going to have to, you know who was
how
big?
How do we cover?
You know who was big?
Who
we should have touched it. It's always these Buffalo games. UConn.
Yeah.
The Huskies.
2 weeks in a row, we thought about taking them, and they covered the spread.
We got killed there. That's a classic gambler's, like, you know, what is it, reminiscing? This is
now it's tied. And then, like, I get C-Cat and Theo talking smack in our group text last night. I was dying laughing at what you were saying, by the way.
First of all,
they didn't even get their picks in correctly. C-Cat sends the wrong spreads. He sent the wrong lines.
For those who don't know, theoretically speaking, which is the show you could hear 2 to 4 weekdays on these various stations with Theo Dorsey and Christian Cat, we're competing against them, making 6 picks a week. One is a lock and a mix of NFL and college. I'm in charge of putting up together the social aspect of it and sort of putting together the picks. C-Cat, the wonderful producer of, theoretically speaking, the reluctant producer of this very program, who's not here with us right now because they went to Heat Media Day.
And no one invited us to South Beach.
Sends me a thing on Friday night. I ask him for the picks on Thursday. He sends me it Friday night when they took Miami -18.
Right, and I asked him before we left, remember? Friday or Thursday.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't here Friday because he had high school. God bless him. But I looked at him, I said, dude, I better not see a Friday game here. Remember?
I remember we talked to him. I'm like, give us the picks.
I said, I better not see a Friday game here if you're not making picks.
So he gives me the picks, including Miami, of course. And Miami's in the third quarter at this point. But so I'm putting that together. And he also puts Wagner against FAU -31.5. Wagner? What? And I didn't check. I didn't think to double check. I'm not in charge of checking the Wagner spread. That's not my job.
No.
That is not in my job description. So lo and behold, Wagner loses 41-10 to FAU. I'm like, oh, wow, that was a rough one for them. As it turns out, FAU was favored in that, and it wasn't even 31. It was 34.5.
So they were the phonies.
So where did you get the spread and you chose the wrong team as the favorite. I think they should be penalized for that. Agreed. I don't think they should get that because Wagner, technically, if they wanted to do plus 31.5, they technically covered.
Who's the commissioner of this?
Who's
the commissioner of our punchline picks? Who's the judge and juror?
It's got to be.
Who do I file a complaint with?
Brian Rowitz. It's got to be him. Our director of content.
Yeah, I need to file a complaint. I mean, that's unacceptable.
And then he's yelling at me for a Christian Cat, that is, yelling at me for technicalities. When you sent me a game that was in the middle of it, and you also sent me the incorrect line and score, I can't deal with it. I can't stay. I can't deal with it. That's our punchline picks or fiasco.
Are we tied?
I think so.
Colin, we need.
We'll be all right.
Brother,
it's a long season.
We need to lock in.
It's a long season. Speaking of a long season, how about the Jets coming off a 24-3 win Thursday night about 12 days ago? Against the New England Patriots. They have a long week off back at home, taking on the Denver Broncos, coming off a big win at Tampa Bay last week. Bo Nix and company, just like, here's basically what happened. First half, Bo Nix's stats were 7 of 15, and he had -7 passing yards. I don't think I've ever seen that before.
I saw one time before. It was Bears versus Browns. Justin Fields got sacked like 9 times.
So, it was a torrential downpour, so we got screwed with the weather because we took Jets -7.5. But we get the weather was a complete nightmare. It was 3-0, 9-7. It was a 10-7, a 10-9. All of a sudden, the Jets are driving 2 minutes to go. Rodgers gets sacked on fourth down around midfield, a little into Jet territory. Jets defense makes a stand. You saw the end of this game, right?
Yeah.
They make a stand.
Couldn't believe it.
The Will Lutz comes out there for a field goal on fourth down to make a 40-something yarder, 50-yarder maybe. In the torrential downpour, completely goes wide. All right, Jets are in good shape here. They have no timeouts remaining, about 2 minutes to go. They have plenty of time. They're essentially midfield. And you got Aaron Rodgers. The Jets get a pass interference call on Mike Williams to move up into the field a little bit and get a couple bad plays where Rodgers is running. Rodgers is on the ground every single play. The offensive line put on a horrendous performance for the Jets this past Sunday. And that Bronco defensive line is underrated. But Rodgers on the ground every play. All of a sudden, they line up for a field goal with Greg Zuerlein. Greg the leg,
50 yards.
Who has been in the league for 15 years and has been a very reliable kicker. I think it was like a 48-yarder, a 47-yarder. It was manageable. I know it's a torrential downpour, goes wide left. Jets lose the game 10-9. That is a disgrace.
Can I tell you where the Jets lost the game? I believe this was the third quarter. The second quarter, 0-0 at the time. Denver fumbles, and the Jets take over on their own 34, and they have to settle for 3. Bro, you got to capitalize on plays like that. Now, the thing I hate in the NFL is when people, and I'm not saying you're blaming the weather, Colin, but I don't care if it's raining, if it's snowing, you got to figure it out.
I agree.
You got to figure it out.
And how about everybody post-game, basically a civil war going on right in terms of power dynamics in the Jet background. You had Saleh talking about how they need to tone back the offensive cadences and this and that and the other. I didn't really read too much into that.
Dude, it's Rodgers against Saleh.
Then Rodgers comes out and talking about holding players accountable. It was essentially a clash to the media between Robert Saleh, the head coach, and Aaron Rodgers. And all I hear this morning is how basically Saleh's halfway out of the job. Listen, while I agree that Saleh, I don't think he's a great head coach, why is Saleh catching all the blame for this? I don't think he put together a great game plan. I don't think the team was terribly motivated.
Hang on. They did defensively.
Yeah. He's a defensive head coach. He was a great defensive coordinator for San Francisco. They put on -7 passing yards in the first half. You could chalk that up to some weather, but Rodgers went 24-42. This is not.
How about Colin? You blame the former head coach who lined up from 65 yards out for a Brandon McManus field goal on the road on Monday Night Football.
Yeah.
Guy's as clueless as it gets. And I know it sounds like I'm personally attacking Nathaniel Hackett. I'm sure he's a great person, But that guy cannot coach football. I don't think he can coach football in the NFL.
And he's been protected by Rodgers for years.
Every step of the way.
God. So ultimately, while Saleh deserves some blame, the team should have absolutely no excuse to lose that game.
What happened to the run game, by the way?
Yeah. The offensive line, they were terrible.
Look at Breece Hall. Let me go through his yards, folks. He had 10 carries for 4 yards against Denver.
What did Braylon do?
Stand by on that. But quickly on Hall, 10 carries for 4 yards. New England, 16 carries for 54. At Tennessee, 14 carries for 62. He has yet to go over 65 yards in a game this year. Come on, man. This was the meat and potatoes. Like, I know I joke around with my deep voice, but seriously, getting deep voice guy aside, dude, you had a run game last year. You didn't have quarterback play. You had a worse off. Everyone told me they had a worse offensive line, too, and you were still able to run the football effectively. You signed an offensive line. You got a quote-unquote franchise quarterback and a guy who's going to be able to help you compete for a Super Bowl and Aaron Rodgers. There's no excuse for this offense to be that bad.
I agree. 100%. There's no excuse for the Jets to lose that game. And I guess a lot of that falls under the umbrella because he's the head coach. I understand that. But the idea that Saleh should catch every ounce of this blame when essentially everybody knows that this is Aaron Rodgers' team. This is Aaron Rodgers, who in a lot of ways has more power than Saleh in that locker room. So that's my point on that. I don't think Saleh should be the one that's chained up here because of how poorly Rodgers did and how terrible that offensive game plan was from Nathaniel Hackett.
Speaking of Allen, you asked for Braylon Allen on the ground, 8 carries for 34 yards.
You can't give these guys.
And then 11 for 55, 7 for 33, and he had 1 carry on Monday Night Football against San Francisco.
You can't throw the ball 42 times in a freaking hurricane. You can't do it.
And that's why I said, like, I understand that, like you said, it's very hard to throw the football. Fine, dude, but you have to find a way to put up points. When you get the ball on your opponent's 34-yard line, at home, with an upgraded offensive line, one of the best quarterbacks to ever do it, two good running backs in Allen and Hall, you must get a touchdown there. You have to get a touchdown there.
Terrible by the Jets.
And against the Broncos. It's not like they're playing the Niners. It's not like they're playing, I can't believe I'm going to say this, the Vikings, the best team in the NFC. Okay? You're not playing world beaters here. Tennessee, New England, and Denver. The three teams you played outside of San Francisco, the defending NFC champ, and you're 2-2 to show for it. And I know people are tired of hearing me talk about Buffalo and how good Josh Allen is. By the way, ask me how much I care that Josh Allen laid an egg on Monday Night Football against.
Does it matter?
Couldn't care less.
I agree.
They're going to win the division and they're going to be in the playoffs and they're going to have a chance to go to the Super Bowl.
I don't think it matters either.
He's still the best quarterback in the NFL right now. Right now in week 5, you see Patrick Mahomes, whatever. Yeah, he's the best. But, like, statistically and the way he's been playing, he's still the best quarterback.
The Bills were due to lose one. That Sunday Night Football game, the Ravens needed the game. That's the bottom line. Coaches under fire today, whether it be Doug Peterson, Nick Sirianni, Robert Saleh, go down the list. Essentially, all of these coaches are being fired upon. For their jobs, for their, you know, terrible clock management, go down the list. Nick Sirianni, essentially every week, is being blamed for something. And we'll get into that a little later. We got Steve Pollitt, Senior Good Karma Brands President, joining us next. We're going to have Jonathan Zaslow of the Zaslow Show 2.0 and ESPN Radio on the College Football Tour as well, joining us at 5:15. Packed program today, but I wanted to get everybody's thoughts really quickly. Nick Sirianni, same boat. Nick Sirianni was apparently a helicopter parent last year. That's all people cared about. Nick Sirianni is too involved. Nick Sirianni is breathing down Hurts' neck. He is not letting the defense spread their wings. He's not letting the coordinators do what the coordinators are supposed to do. All right, so the stories come out in the offseason that Nick Sirianni is backing off. He brought in two experienced guys in Kellen Moore and Fangio. They know what they're doing. I'll stay out of the way. Sirianni, the offense goes that way, and the defense goes that way. And all of a sudden here, now the Eagles, of course, a terrible start against the Buccaneers on the road to a team they lost to in the playoffs, too. They got to play tougher than that. But this is all Sirianni's fault now? Hurts, the offense didn't do anything in the first half. This is Sirianni's problem? He has terrible clock management. I understand that, but clock management did not lose them that game. Motivation might have. That might be a Sirianni problem, but that game plan was terrible. Yeah. Hurts was terrible.
Yep. And I'm looking at the NFC East. Hang on, Kyle. Let me clean off the windshield wiper. All right, let me get the rain out. 3-1. The Washington Commanders are leading the NFC East with the Eagles losing. With Dallas being 2-2. I gotta look at this again. 3-1. The Commanders are 3-1.
Yeah. Daniels has more scoring drives than incompletions on the year.
Rookie quarterback, rookie head coach,
rookie GM.
Now, and at Arizona, who we were giving flowers to a week ago, at Arizona, at Cincinnati, they got 2 wins. Now, they lost to Tampa Bay. Eagle fans freaking out. I think Tampa Bay's actually, I think they're good.
They are good.
I think that they were mad that they got boat raced last week. And they wanted to make a statement at home. And for some reason, Jalen Hurts and that team just can't play in Tampa Bay. But my big thing on that count, NFC East wide open.
You're not gonna play well every week. I don't agree with the idea of, bringing Nick Sirianni out to pasture, bringing Robert Saleh out to pasture, when I don't necessarily put all the blame of those games on the head coaches. I think there's a much bigger problems at stake. We'll get into that more next throughout the entire show. It's Russo and Rizzo. We got Steve Polizzino, Good Karma Brands president, joining us next. Stick around. It's Russo and Rizzo live here at ESPN 106.3.
Let's get back to the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios. This is Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.
Packed week of sports on a Monday here, last day of September, I believe, right? There's no 31st in September. October 1st starting tomorrow, Halloween season. Unless Russo and Rizzo live here, ESPN 106.3. Colin Russo, Mike Rizzo with Damian Perez, of course, helping us out behind the glass. Welcoming in a special guest we can hear weekly, Good Karma Brands, West Palm native. Guy who's been around here forever. Good Karma Brands president, Steve Polizzino, joining us now. Steve, what's going on? How you doing?
Colin, you're right. Lots to talk about. Rizzo, how are you?
Uncle Steve.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm good, partner.
Okay?
Yeah, I'm good to go. Yeah. I was very much so under the weather this time last week, though. I tried to gut it through. I tried to come in, but ultimately I got sent home last Tuesday. So it's good to hear from you again.
Yeah, it's a new world. Nobody wants people coming in that are sick. In the old world, it was like, tough it out. Now it's like, no one, don't spread your germs.
Right, right.
Steve, plenty to talk about today.
It used to be a badge of honor. Now it's a sign of irresponsibility.
Yep. It will not happen again. It will not happen again.
So... All righty, Steve, plenty to talk about here. We'll start with the first game of that doubleheader. Mets-Braves, did you watch it?
Had it on in the corner of my office, my workspace.
So you saw a little bit of it. That's mojo that we saw from the Mets there. The much-needed mojo for a team that never has mojo. A terrific finish, 8-7 ball game.
It was like they were, in Mets fashion, they were they losing, take the lead, and it's all set up for them to win, and then they lose the lead again. And I think if they lost there, that would have just been like Mets fan fashion. Like, this is what happens to us. Diaz comes in. They have this love-hate affair with this guy, and he blows the lead. That would be like par for the course, but not the case. Lindor, probably as underrated as anybody in baseball, comes back, hits the home run. Pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. Now the real interesting thing, and by the way, Colin, I don't know if anybody besides you and me care about this topic right now, but
who cares?
What do you do?
Yeah, we're doing it.
I do. All three of us do.
Well, all right, good. What do you do in game two? Now, I'm actually seeing the lineup right now, so it's kind of cheating, but what do you do in game two if you're the Mets? Do you rest guys and get ready? You've secured your playoff spot, or do you try to win this game? Because for some reason, you'd rather have the Diamondbacks in the playoffs than the Braves.
Well, really quickly, just to update everybody, Chris Sale, who was slated to be as the emergency pitcher if the Braves did not win that first game, he was slated to go game two. officially scratched, not playing today, back spasms. No sale for the Braves today. I wonder if the Mets can sense a little bit of blood in the water here. I thought they would punt this game and forget it. We got into the postseason. But now, no sale, no Cy Young on the mound. Watch the Mets try to knock the Braves out here. I'm sure that's what the Diamondbacks are thinking. That's a live reaction to that, Steve.
Yeah, very deflating. Like, first off, the Braves had it. They lost it. They had it again. Then you don't have Sale. You're at home. I know that. But, like, the overall pressure of knowing that you have to win this game. You literally absolutely have to win this game. It looks like the Mets have gone half starters, maybe even a third starters. So, I mean, that at least gives the Braves a little bit of hope.
Steve, what would you do? Now, you're a household Yankee fan, correct?
Yes.
What would you do if you got a Yankee and Mets World Series?
It doesn't really matter to me, like, who the Yankees play in the World Series. It's just getting the World Series. Yeah. I mean, like, I don't look at when the Yankees played the Mets as, like, my all-time greatest moment as a Yankee fan. In the World Series when they played in the past.
Subway Series?
2000 Series wasn't in a great series either.
No, it wasn't a great series. I mean, the Mets are, I guess the only thing is, you know, if you're living in New York and it's your team, you really want to pound the other team because the bragging rights, because the everyday, the people that you're going to face. I'm not in that. You know, I'm in, as you know, West Palm. I don't encounter the same sort of everyday, rivalry, types of vibes. But if you're like every day in that office on the subway, I think it's different. Like when I lived in New York, I think it was different. You wanted to beat on the Mets, and that's relevant. I think anywhere where, I don't want to say your biggest rival, because I don't think the Yankees would call the Mets their biggest rival, but where you do have that friendly rivalry, those two teams that are both fighting for headlines.
Grant Holmes is going to be the starting pitcher for the Braves today, just about first pitch. No Lindor. Acuna will be leading off for the Mets here, so I imagine Lindor won't be used in emergency situations here. But Steve Politiner, Good Karma Brands, joining us now. Steve, we'll give you updates as this game goes along if anything interesting happens, but let's shift over to the NFL and what we saw yesterday. And we alluded to it a little bit last segment, but I wanted to get your thoughts on this because this seems to be the talk of the town. And it's two head coaches. I want to start with one, the Jets. Robert Saleh has been under fire, essentially, because of the civil war that's going on within the Aaron Rodgers power dynamic and the Robert Saleh power dynamic. Jets had as bad of a loss you could find against the Denver Broncos at home in that terrible weather yesterday. To me, I don't think you could put too much blame comparatively on Saleh because Rodgers was the one who played poorly. The offense is the one who played poorly. But it sounds like people are ready to get Saleh out of there. What's your takeaway on that?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean, you can't have it both ways. Rodgers gets to do whatever he wants. He calls the plays. He's got his guy. Like, the defense was great. The offense was atrocious. Last week, that was the Aaron Rodgers that we all remembered. That was the MVP Aaron Rodgers. And this week, like, and somehow Saleh coached differently on the offense. Now, I don't think he has great command of the team, and he does some very strange, very strange things, the way he uses the media over time. I'm not saying he's anything like great, but I don't put yesterday on him. Now, ultimately, right, it always falls on the head coach, but how could Rodgers against the Broncos give that much of a dud? That to me was more on Rodgers than on Saleh. It's also so, I mean, you fire coaches in the NFL late in the season when you know it's over or they've lost the locker room. If you fire them now, then it really shows you that they probably shouldn't have even made it into this season because that means they didn't have the locker room almost to begin with. And I could see that with Saleh, but I don't put yesterday on Saleh.
Steve, if, Jets 2-2 on the year, say this year kind of goes south, win about 7 or 8 games, is this going to taint Rodgers' career a little bit if he's unable to win in New York?
I don't think so, because he came back off of the Achilles. I don't, this is all gravy, I think, at this point, for Rodgers. Taint, interesting word. Will it? I don't think it's going to really, smudge his career. I do think he'll be in that list of those guys, that ended up in that other uniform at the end of their career, and flamed out. But I don't think it doesn't change the MVPs. It doesn't change you know, what he achieved. This is a guy that should have won more, should have played in more Super Bowls, but that should have been with the Packers. I don't think that necessarily here. Now, he's got a great defense. I agree there. It is set up for him. He has excellent skill position players. He has a lot going for him this year, but in the long run, 15, 20 years down the road, I think we'll still say his career was, you know, he was the best player in the league for a period, yeah, probably for 5 years. He was the best player in the league.
Might be Favre-esque, right?
Mm. And he's trying to probably avoid that Favre ending. You know, shifted out in sort of a bad light from the Green Bay, and then now trying to figure it out post-Packer career. Nonetheless, Steve.
Well, then he shouldn't have followed him, and then he shouldn't have followed him.
Yeah, it's very strange. Very strange how they've handled that. Nonetheless, shifting to another team that's sort of in hot water a little bit, the Philadelphia Eagles, of course, coming off a win last week, a gritty win against the New Orleans Saints, who were 2-0 at the time, go to the Buccaneers, a game in which they lost last year in the playoffs. 33-16 final, it was 24-7. The Buccaneers essentially blitzed them from the start. Nick Sirianni, head coach there, another one who's probably taken the most of the blame here, as he should. I understand he's the head coach. But this is another one where I'm critical of Sirianni, but all of a sudden he was a helicopter parent last year. He was told to back off in the offseason, and now all of a sudden everything is his problem when the offense isn't clicking. I think this is a little much on Sirianni, but I wanted to get your takeaway on what's going on with the Eagles, number one, and how the whole camaraderie between Hurts and Sirianni is.
Well, again, it's like, where do you place the blame? Hurts, what has Hurts thrown, like an interception the most consecutive games in the NFL? Like, yeah. Is that Sirianni being too tight on him, being too hard on him, Sirianni backing off? I mean, it definitely looks like Sirianni is on the ropes, like his own ropes. He doesn't seem to have a lot of, like, command.
Oh, totally.
He's trying to joke. And to me, it always goes down to, what is your reputation in your locker room? How hard are guys going out, you know, and playing for you? When they're like, you know, when you have those answers like, you know, well, I play for whoever, or I'm playing hard for myself. Like, it seems like there's a little bit of, like, I like Sirianni, but nobody's like running through fires, you know, for Sirianni. That's one. I hate to say it. It feels very hockey, like where 2 years ago you're like in the championship, and then the next year you fire the coach. This one though feels like they have too much talent. They have too much talent. The NFC feels wide open this year. They can't blow this one this year. They have a healthy Saquon. I know they'll get the receivers back. This one feels like maybe this one to me. I would be more supportive of a change in season.
Steve, transitioning a little
bit. You know what they'll do. They'll go offense with Moore. You know they'll go off, yep, like with the high up-and-comer, you know, Kellen Moore.
Fangio has head coaching experience, though. Keep that in mind.
Right.
Yep, but I feel like he's more the – he tried to be a head coach, didn't work out. He's more of a deco.
Yep.
Let's go with the guy that hasn't tried to be a head coach yet and catch the hot guy on the way up. Fangio would probably make more sense, Colin. Because he's been there, and he won't have to deal with the first-time blank, first-time media, first-time the family. How's the relationship change when you go from a coordinator head coach? He would make more sense. And I don't think a Belichick mid-season is a reality.
Oh,
it's too hard in the NFL to go mid-season. But,
no,
you know, there might be a race to get him because it seems like he's going to end up in the NFC East one way or the other, and your best chance to get him might be to get him now.
Steve, best guess, who wins that division, and are you buying the Commanders?
Into the Commanders, always into the Commanders. I didn't have them winning the division. I had the Cowboys winning the division before the season started.
Me too.
But the Commanders, to me, were like going to be that little sneaky team. But even better. Like, they're fun to watch. They're like it's an enjoyment. I call him JD3. He's like RG3 when he was starting out. I just hope he's so brittle. I hope he can protect himself and have a long career because he's really fun to watch.
Steve, it's being rumored now that the Big Ten and the SEC are looking to come to some sort of arrangement, some sort of deal where it would be a scheduling thing where I guess they would mismatch in some of the amount they play and a Big Ten team, SEC team every year. Also trying to, you know, lobby for the college football playoff to establish 4 auto bids per conference. Starting in 2026 when the new contract is up. I wanted to get your initial reaction to that. If you think there's any possibility of this And if we're trying something new and it works, why try to get in hot water and change it up? I want to get your takeaway on that.
Well, because, Colin, the reason to change up is because I don't think it, when this was all set up, there was supposed to be five power conferences. And then the Pac-12 fell apart. And now you see what's happening, you know, with the Mountain West and the Pac-12. They're both kind of fighting each other, you know, to exist. They each need to go and recruit another, you know, another team or two. But for a moment there, like, it wasn't where the Big 12 and the Pac-12, like, it wasn't so, it was the SEC, and then it was sort of everybody else, like Big 10, Pac-12, Big 12. Now it's just so SEC, Big 10. Like, I'd rather it be out in the open. And wouldn't you rather just be out in the open what the reality is? It's those two, and then it's everybody else fighting for third, and to just to hang in that relevancy. So, sure, put those two together, because whether it's on the up and up or not, that's how it is today.
Steve, I appreciate you joining us. Great insight as always. Thanks for giving us the time. We'll talk soon.
Appreciate it, Steve.
See you guys.
Steve Politano, Good Karma Brands President, Palm Beach County Sports Commission Hall of Famer, presented by PNC Bank, joins us every week. Steve does a great job for us, one of our leaders here at Good Karma Brands. It's Russo and Rizzo live here at ESPN 106.3. We'll do some 5 and 5 next.